Have you ever felt like God asked you to do something impossible? Maybe he put an opportunity in front of you. Maybe it was even good, and God put something in front of you that you were afraid of, that you thought to say yes would really stretch you, or you didn't think you were capable of saying yes to that opportunity. Or maybe it was more of a situation. Maybe it was a challenge or a circumstance that you found yourself in that you felt like it was impossible to make it through it. And you had no idea how you were going to make it out. And maybe the thing that comes to mind, that situation, that challenge, that opportunity, or that circumstance isn't in the past, but maybe it's today. Maybe you find yourself right in the midst of something that just leaves you wondering, how? How in the world am I going to make it through this? How is this going to work? Am I even capable? And is this possible? I want you to know this morning that if you've ever felt that way before, or if you feel that this morning, I just want you to hear me say this morning, welcome to the club. Like, we ought to have shirts made. Because I think that's so many of us in this room, and that really is what it's like to follow Jesus, that we continue to come up against moments and seasons and storms and opportunities that leave us wondering, is this even possible? And I tell you that this morning not to diminish what you're currently feeling, but honestly to encourage you so that you would know that you are not alone and you are in a room full of people who have all experienced those things and maybe are today. And I hope that you would be encouraged this morning as we look at a moment in God's story where he will come to somebody and ask them to do something that they believe is impossible, that stretches them way out of their comfort zone and they don't think that they are capable. And I'm talking this morning about the story of Moses. So if you have a Bible, would you turn with me to the book of Exodus chapter 3? We'll also put the words up on screen for you to follow along. But as you turn there this morning and as we pick up, I just want to catch you up on what's been happening in the story of God and his people. Last week, we talked about a man named Abraham that God came to and made a promise that he would turn his descendants. They would be so numerous that he would make a nation out of them. And God kept his promise, and his descendants became so numerous that they came to be known as Israel, as the Israelites. There's so much that happens, but the quick notes are they eventually prospered, and they ended up in Egypt, where they thrived for a while. But then as the years go by, one day there's a new king. There's a new pharaoh ruling over Egypt, and he does not recognize or worship the God of the Israelites. And he begins to look at them, and he sees them as less than. And really, he sees them as an opportunity to be exploited. And he chooses to enslave them in order to have a workforce to do the things that he wants. And in the midst of their oppression, in the midst of their enslavement, they continue to grow in number. So much so that one day Pharaoh looks at them, and he recognizes that they are a threat to him. That if they continue to grow in number, that one day they can just turn on him and conquer him. And so one day he gives a horrible command and decree. And here's what it says in Exodus 2, verse 22. Pharaoh gave this order to all of his people. Every Hebrew boy that is born, you must throw into the Nile, but let every girl live. In his fear, he gives his people a command that every Hebrew boy that is born must be thrown into the Nile and killed. He's trying to decimate them as a people. And yet, in the midst of a horrible and dark chapter in the lives and the story of Israel, God's working. And we're told about a woman who has a son, and in order to save her son, she puts him into a basket and she places him into the very same river, the Nile, and says that God performs a miracle. She trusts God to protect her son, and God takes that basket, the boy in the basket, and he brings him all the way to Pharaoh's daughter. And she sees this baby, she takes him in as her own, and he becomes a part of the royal family. And his name is Moses. Now, we're not told much more. About 40 years go by, and then we see that Moses begins to have sympathy for his people who are enslaved. And he begins to have sympathy on them, and one day Moses sees an Egyptian man beating an Israelite. And he decides to step in, and in a moment of rage, he ends up killing the Egyptian man. And when news about what he has just done begins to spread, and he realizes it's no longer a secret, he flees, and he leaves Egypt to start a new life in the middle of nowhere, essentially, as a shepherd. Now, from that moment, about 40 more years go by, but as Moses is out on his own living his life, here's what God will tell us. Here's what's happening. It says, during that long period, the king of Egypt died. There's now a new Pharaoh. The Israelites groaned in their slavery and they cried out. And their cry for help because of their slavery went up to God. God heard their groaning. He remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. So God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. It says that during this time, God's people are still oppressed. They're enslaved. They're stripped of their dignity and they're being killed. And in the midst of the hopelessness, God's working. And he's working in a way that no one can see at the time, but he is working. And what I want us to look at today is we look at this moment, again, in this series, Old Testament Jesus, we look at stories in the Old Testament and moments you may have heard before. You may have seen movies about this moment, that we look at them, we recognize they have purpose, but when we look at them with the filter of looking for Jesus, they have a whole new life and meaning. And that is absolutely true for this story. We see that God hears the cries of his people and he decides to step back into the story. And 40 years later, Moses is about 80 years old at this point, tending to sheep. He encounters God. It says that the angel of the Lord spoke to Moses. We've already discussed in this series that anytime you see the angel of the Lord, that's Jesus stepping into the story. That Jesus comes to him as a burning bush. And Moses sees this bush that's on fire, but it's not being consumed, so he's curious. He goes over, and then God speaks to him, and he says, Moses, Moses, take off your sandals, because the ground that you're standing on is holy. And so Moses abides. We see that Jesus steps into the story to do something. Why? Verse 7 says, God said, I have seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I've heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I'm concerned about their suffering. Jesus steps into the story and he says, my people are hurting. They are oppressed. They feel forgotten, but I see them. And then he told Moses this. He said, go. I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. Jesus steps into the story and he tells Moses, I'm going to do something crazy. I'm going to do something huge, magnificent, that feels impossible. I'm going to rescue my people. I'm going to bring them out of Egypt. I'm going to rescue them from Pharaoh, and I'm going to use you. That's crazy. For God to step into the story and to say, I'm going to do this huge, magnificent, impossible thing, and I'm going to use you. I mean, it left Moses wondering why. Moses thought he was the wrong person for the job. I mean, look at Moses' response. He said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? He says, I think you've got the wrong person, God. And if I'm honest with you, if I'm looking from the outside in, I would kind of agree that Moses was probably the last person God should have ever picked for such a task. I mean, think about his story. Moses left the place that God is about to send him back to. He left that place in shame because of what he's done. He killed someone, and he's fled the consequences of it. Not only that, he's most likely hated or despised by the two people that God's about to send him to. He's despised by the Egyptians because he killed one of them and fled, and he's probably despised by the Hebrews because he was a part of the royal family that has been oppressing them. And on top of all of that, Moses is not a young man anymore. He's old at this point in his life. And on top of all of that, there's a possibility, and some scholars even believe, that Moses had a speech impediment of some sort, or a stutter. We don't know. Look at Moses' description. He said to the Lord, pardon your servant, Lord. I've never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you've spoken to your servant. I'm slow of speech and tongue. Now, we don't know if he had a speech impediment, a stutter, or if he's just downplaying his own abilities, but what we do know is he's coming to God and saying, you've got the wrong person, and here are all of the reasons why. Here are all of my shortcomings, all my failures. You've got the wrong person. Now, I love God's response to him, but before we read it, I want you to think about what you thought about a second ago. What is the situation you find yourself in? What's the opportunity in front of you? What has God put in front of you or put you in the midst of that you feel like you cannot make it through, that it feels impossible? What are all of the reasonings that come to mind? Do you think things like, I just don't know enough. I'm not spiritual enough. I'm not mature enough. I don't know enough. Do you feel like you just don't have time? You don't have enough money or training? Or are you in the midst of something right now that you're afraid? You're filled with anxiety and worry. You feel alone or incapable. I want you to think about whatever it is that you feel like is making it impossible. And I want us to read God's response to Moses and to us together. Here's what God said to him. Who gave humans their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go and I will help you speak and will teach you what to say. What I love about this is that God is coming to Moses and Moses is saying to him, you've got the wrong person and here are all the reasons why. And on top of that, you want me to speak for you? Well, I don't speak well, God. And God's response is, who made you? Who do you think made your mouth? Who do you think makes people the way that they are? Moses, look around. Who has been with you on this journey the entire time? Is it not me, the Lord? He's saying, you're telling me stuff I already know. I made you that way. And think about your own situation, your own context, your own circumstance. God is saying the same to you. I'm not surprised. I made you that way, and I've put you here. And look at God's response. God says to him, listen, I want you to go, and here's why. Because I will be with you. Moses, this is going to work because I will be with you. And this will be the sign that it is I who have sent you. When you brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. So how is this going to work? He comes to Moses and he says, it's going to work, Moses, because I'm going with you. Don't miss this. He doesn't come to Moses and say, Moses, pats him on the back. Moses, you're more capable than you think. Moses, you're actually really smart. Moses, you're actually a really good leader. He comes to Moses and says, listen, I made you this way, and this is going to work because I'm going with you. You are not alone. This is such a powerful reminder. And what I want us to see this morning is this, that God is the hero in Moses' story. That God is the hero in this story. And maybe you know it well. Maybe you've seen movies about Moses and his life and this moment we're about to read. But the point is, God is the hero of this story. And God does this over and over throughout the Bible. God comes to people that make no sense, that would be the last people you and I would have picked to do something, but God uses them anyways. And I think God does this so that when he does something incredible, that at the end of it, they can take no credit. That it's so clear that God was the one who did all of it. And I believe that's what's happening here, that God is the hero and he's about to show us. And that point is the point of everything that's about to happen in the story of God, his people, and Pharaoh. Moses comes back to God and he says, God, when I go and do what you've asked me to do, they're going to wonder who sent me. And they're going to want to know, what's your name? So what do I tell them? And the reason he's asking is because Moses is about to step into a context in the Egypt world where they serve and worship many different gods. The god of this, the god of that, the god of the river and the sun and all these different gods. He says, they're going to want to know, okay, well, which one sent you? And I love God's response to him. He says this to Moses, tell them I am who I am. I am the I am is what God is saying here. He says, I want you to go and I want you to tell them that the only God has sent you. That their gods are not real, but the only true God is the one who's sending you. The only true God is the one who's going with you, and I'm about to show them how powerful I really am. And so as Moses takes this message to Pharaoh that he should let God's people go, Moses refuses. And in order to show how powerful he is, God sends plagues. He sends 10 different plagues that are all meant to show his power and authority over creation. And they're honestly all responses to the Egyptian gods. The god of this that had authority over this, supposedly, God shows up and says, no, they don't, I do. And let me show you. I wish we could walk through all of the plagues. We don't have time this morning, but the purpose and what I want you to know is they're meant to show God's authority over creation, and they continue to increase in severity and consequence. And every time, God reminds Pharaoh, let my people go, and he refuses. And it all culminates after 9 plagues, and God comes to the final one, and he gives one final warning to Pharaoh. And here's what he says through Moses. He says, this is what's going to happen. Here's the final plague. About midnight, I will go through Egypt. There will be a lion, and he says, every firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die. There will be a loud wailing throughout Egypt, worse than there's ever been or ever will be again. What God's saying here is because of the actions of Pharaoh and the Egyptians, because they are unwilling to listen to him, there's finally coming something that's going to be worse than all of the other warnings and all of the other plagues. He says that judgment itself is coming, that their actions have led to consequences, and that the rebellion leads to punishment. And so as judgment is preparing to come, as God just described, God steps into the story again, and he tells God, his own people, that there's a rescue plan. And he gives them a glimpse of what he's about to do, but also what he is doing in his entire story. God comes to them, and he gives them specific instructions. And here's what he tells them. He says, I want every household to take a lamb. Go and get a lamb that is without blemish. It's very specific instructions. He says, I want everyone to slaughter that lamb at twilight on the same night. And then I want you to take the blood of that lamb and I want you to put it on your doorpost and the lintel into your house. It looks like this. He says, I want you to take the blood of the lamb and I want you to put it over the doorpost that leads into your family's home. And he says, that night I want you to have a dinner together. I want you to eat the lamb. And as you eat this lamb and do all these things I've instructed to you, he's like, here's how I want you to do it. I want you to have this meal with your cloak tucked into your belt, with your sandals on your feet, and with your staff in your hand. He says, because when I do what I'm about to do, Pharaoh's going to let you go, and you have to go immediately. So he says, be ready. Eat ready, sleep ready. And he says, it's going to be so quick that you do not have time to put leaven in your bread because it takes time for it to rise. He says, so just take it and go. And he says, this is what I want you to do. He says, here's what will happen. On that same night, verse 12, I will pass through Egypt and strike down every firstborn of both people and animals. And I will bring judgment on all of the gods of Egypt. I am the Lord. The blood will be a sign for you on the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you. No destructive plague will touch you when I strike Egypt. God says, my judgment is about to come on all of Egypt. But if you do what I've said, if you follow my instructions, he says, when my judgment comes through and I see the blood of that lamb on your door, my judgment will pass over you and it will not enter your home. That's why it's referred to as the Passover. And so just as God said, that night he came. And his judgment came throughout Egypt. It struck down every firstborn, just as he said. Yet when he came to those who had followed his instruction, he passed over them. And in the end, we see that God's people were spared. They were rescued. They were eventually freed from Egypt. And it was from that moment on that God commanded them that every single year they were to have that same meal. And that as they had the meal, as they did everything the same way, that they were to remember that moment. And so from that year on, every year they would remember that God rescued them, remember what God did. Now this is a powerful story on its own. It's a powerful story of God hearing his people's cry, of God doing something that seems impossible through somebody who would have been our last choice, and of God rescuing his people. It's a powerful story in its own right, and yet when we look at the same story and moment, looking for Jesus, it has a complete new life, and it comes together in a powerful way. What we just read is one of the most powerful symbols and stories pointing us to Jesus. Everything that we just read is pointing us to him. And there are so many parallels between the instructions that God gave and the lamb that was sacrificed in Jesus. Think about this. Both Jesus and the lamb are without blemish. Those are the instructions given to God's people, to pick a lamb that's without blemish. And Jesus himself was without blemish. He was sinless. He was perfect. Both of them are sacrificed in order to protect others from judgment. And both of the sacrifices deliver people from bondage. God's people are rescued out of Egypt and slavery, and every person who believes and trusts in Jesus and his sacrifice is delivered from the bondage of sin. This is pointing us to Jesus and showing us that this is but a glimpse of what Jesus will one day do, that Jesus is the true Passover lamb. This is why in the New Testament, there's a man named John the Baptist who's baptizing people, and he's preparing the way for the Messiah. He's telling everyone who would listen to him, listen, you think I'm great? The one coming after me is greater than me. And he's coming any day now, sometime soon, and he will be the Messiah. And when John the Baptist lays eyes on Jesus, here's what he says. He says, look, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. He absolutely knew that who was standing in front of him was the representation and the culmination of that first Passover lamb. He knew it. And I want you to know that Jesus knew it as well. Here's what I want you to think about. That from the moment God rescued his people in Egypt, he commanded them to have that same meal every single year to remember. To remember what God had done. They did this for well over 1,000 years until one day Jesus shows up and he's walking the earth with his disciples. And on the night that Jesus is betrayed, eventually led to his trial and crucifixion, on the night that he's betrayed, he's observing the same Passover meal with his disciples. I want you to think about this. They've done this their entire life. Generations and generations have done this. They knew it so well. They knew what you would say and when and what everything meant and all the symbolism behind everything. It was memorized. It had been ingrained into their minds. And yet, when Jesus gets to the point in the ceremony of the supper, when he would come and he would take the bread and he would say, this bread, remember the unleavened bread that our ancestors ate because they had to go. When he would take the cup and say, this wine represents that lamb's blood that we put over the doorposts. When he gets to that point in the ceremony that they have done their entire lives, Jesus said something different. And instead of pointing back to Pharaoh and Egypt, he said something different. And here's what he said. It says that Jesus took bread, he gave thanks, he broke it, and he gave it to them saying that this is my body, which is about to be broken for you. And he said, do this in remembrance of me. So in the same way, he took the cup. And he said, this cup represents the new covenant, what God's now doing in my blood. He says, take this, drink this, it's poured out for you, and do this in remembrance of me. This is a huge and powerful moment. And Jesus is telling them in this moment, you've done this your entire life. You've done this for thousands of years. And he says, what I want you to know that all of that and everything that happened in Egypt was actually about me. That is huge and powerful. And Jesus is bringing together this story that God's telling in a whole new way and says, you know this, but really it's all been a glimpse. And it's all been to prepare you for me. And it's all showing us this, that Jesus is the hero of the Bible. That Jesus is the hero of God's story. As you look throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament, you will see and be reminded of this over and over and over, that Jesus is the hero. And that's an important reminder, and maybe you need to be reminded of that this morning, of this, that God is not a character in our stories. We often think that God is just a character in our stories that steps into my story to do something for me when I need, but really, we are characters in his story. that God is telling a great, big, grand, beautiful story that you and I are a part of, but he's the hero, not me, and not you. And maybe that's why this morning you feel like you've been trying so hard, but you just cannot succeed. You've been trying to do something or to take steps or to stop doing something, but you just cannot seem to do it. Maybe you feel like your life is full of regrets or mistakes and you can't seem to move past what's behind you. Whatever it is that feels impossible for you this morning that you're in the midst of or God's put in front of you, I just want you to think about this one question. Is Jesus the hero of your story? Is Jesus the hero of your story? Or if you're honest with yourself this morning, are you trying to be? Are you trying to just be stronger, to work harder, to do it on your own? Or are you inviting Jesus to be the hero? Because all throughout God's story, that's what's happening. That when God does something great, it's because he is the hero and he's using us broken people who submit and trust him. So is he the hero of your story? And I want you to know this morning that that's really the point of this entire series we're in, Old Testament Jesus. The point of this series is not to just gain more knowledge. My hope has not been that you would just learn something new and think, oh, I didn't know that, or I didn't realize that was Jesus, or that he was there, or this or that. That's good and that's great, but the point of this series is this. I want you to see that as you look at your Bible, as you think about God's word and his story, that you would be reminded that Jesus has always been there. And that he was there in the moments that you and I missed. That he was there in the moments that seemed hopeless. And I also want you to know that the same is true, that he is here today. He has always been there, and he is with you today. He is with you in your storm. He's with you when you feel alone. He's with you when you feel defeated, and he's with you when you feel crushed. And he's with you when you don't know how you're going to make it through. But he is with you. And so this morning, I just want you to begin to ask yourself, is he the hero of your story? Have you trusted him? Have you given over to him the thing that feels impossible? The thing that you don't feel you're capable of, that you can't say yes to, or you don't know how you're going to make it through. Because that's the theme of God's story, is that we trust him to be the hero. And not our own strength, not our own ability, but that it can and will work because he is with us. And maybe this morning you feel like you've never actually trusted him before. Maybe you recognize that you don't need to just trust him with a circumstance, a situation, an opportunity. You need to trust him with your entire life. And if that's you this morning, I want to invite you to do so. In a few moments when we sing or after the service, I want to invite you to come over to the prayer corner and to talk and to pray with somebody about giving and trusting Jesus for the first time. Or I'll be over here on this side of the stage. Please come and talk to me. I would love to talk and to pray with you about what it looks like to trust Jesus for the first time, and to make him the hero of your story. The last thing I want us to do this morning is I want us to take the Lord's Supper together. And so, Lord's Supper team, you can come forward to your stations. And as we take the Lord's Supper, I want us to sing a really specific song together. And I want to sing this song because of a story in the Old Testament. There's a moment in the Old Testament of three young men who refuse to listen to the king. The king makes a decree that instead of worshiping their God, they have to stop and they have to worship him instead. And when they refuse and they don't obey, they're punished. And in order, the way they choose to punish them is they take these three young men and they throw them into a fiery furnace. And yet after they're thrown in, they quickly begin to realize as they look in that those three young men are unharmed. They're safe. And as they look in, it says that they see what looks like a fourth person in there with them. Again, we're in the Old Testament Jesus series. And we can rest assured that Jesus is with them there. And as we sing this song this morning, I just want you, maybe you need to reflect, remind yourself, or even to say out loud that Jesus has always been with you. Maybe you need to look back. Or maybe you can look at today and remind yourself that he is with you today. In your storm, in your fire, when you feel alone or you feel like it's impossible. But ultimately, God is telling one big, great, beautiful story that you are a part of. But he is the hero. And maybe this morning you just need to give over to him that situation, that circumstance, that challenge, that thing that you're afraid of, but just to recognize he's with you and give it to him. On the night Jesus was betrayed, he took bread, he broke it, and he said, "This is my body broken for you. Eat this and do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, he took the cup, he gave thanks, and he said, "This cup represents a new covenant in my blood." He said, "Drink this and do this in remembrance of me." And every time we participate in this symbol, it's a beautiful reminder, not only of the Last Supper, but it's a beautiful reminder about how all of God's story is pointing to Jesus. And as you partake in just a few moments, as the Lord's Supper team comes by, would you take a moment, hold on to the elements, and remind yourself that this bread and this cup represent that I am not alone, and that he has been with me, and he is with me today. And as you take them, would you remember Jesus' goodness and that you are not alone?